is a methodological presentation. I'll be talking about how we use ethnographic methods to design a sampling frame to do a scientific representative survey among poultry workers in Western North Carolina. The research is part of an environmental justice grant funded by NIOSH, and there are my colleagues from Wake Forest University School of Medicine and the Western North Carolina Workers United from Western North Carolina. That has changed their names. Okay, now we're in the slow mode. The project I'm going to talk about is called JUSTA, which translates justice and health for poultry workers. This is a community-based participatory research project, which is a collaboration of Wake Forest University School of Medicine and Workers United of Western North Carolina. Among our specific aims for these projects were to document exposures and outcomes of stressors among poultry workers and their families, and then to develop culturally and linguistically appropriate educational materials and interventions to reduce these exposures and to improve the health of this population. Now, to do this, we figured we needed data, and we needed valid data on worker occupational injuries so that we could both document the exposures and the outcomes and to develop educational materials in our educational program. We wanted valid, reliable data. At the same time, we couldn't get access to the poultry plants. The companies, though, we tried at one point for 6 months to work with them to get them to allow us into the plants, decided not to let us have access. So we went alone. At the same time, we knew that the data needed to be scientific. Now, by that we mean it had to have a valid sample, and it had to have good measures. I'm going to be talking about the valid sample because, from my perspective, all research is sampling and measurement, and sampling is very important. The data had to be scientific again because we wanted to have our educational programs reflect reality. At the same time, we work in a fairly interesting political environment in which if we came up with results which we could not defend scientifically, we could be attacked politically by the poultry industry and its allies. What we wanted to do is conduct a survey of six counties, of 200 workers in six counties. And these are six counties in which the majority of workers for these three poultry companies, five poultry plants, work. Now, one of the things that becomes interesting is when you look at poultry workers, one could define them as a hard-to-reach population. Now, this is a concept that's really been developed in research on HIV/AIDS and alcohol abuse and drug abuse and other substance abuse. And a hard-to-reach population has two characteristics. One, there's no sampling frame. So you don't know the size or the boundaries of the population from which you're sampling. That makes surveys really difficult. And the members of the population don't necessarily want to talk to you. They have privacy issues that makes them reluctant to want to talk to you about whatever it is you want to talk to them about. So, here are some characteristics of the poultry workers population of Western North Carolina. First, again, there is no sampling frame. We couldn't get a list of workers for the companies because they wouldn't talk to us because we were trying to improve the health of poultry workers. Latino immigrants in that part of the country, as in other parts of the country, have really strong privacy concerns. First, many of them don't have documents. That's a privacy concern. Many of those who have documents are harassed. There's a phrase called driving while Hispanic where we're from. And you can get picked up simply because you look Hispanic and stopped and have the police ask you for your documents and your driver's license, even though you haven't done anything wrong. Many of these workers come from countries where the authorities have harassed them because they're poor people in those countries. They often experience discrimination from authorities in the U.S., and there's a pronounced anti-immigrant climate in many areas of this country. I'm not sure if you all are aware of that, but in Western North Carolina, we have a representative to the U.S. Congress named Virginia Fox, who has made a career on being xenophobic and vitriolic. But, hey, the other thing is, what really makes it even more difficult for us in North Carolina is because ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has decided to use safety training workshops that they've organized for workers, and then when the workers get there, they check their documents and deport them. So that makes it really hard to do occupational safety training in that climate. And then finally, these guys are here to work. They're here to support a family. That's one of the most important things in their lives, and they don't want to look like bad employees. So there's lots of reasons they don't want to talk to us. So we had to come up with a method to figure out where these guys were and get them to talk to us. And what we used was an ethnographic approach. Now, it wasn't stated at the beginning of all this, but I'm an anthropologist, so using ethnographic approaches in public health is something that I think is really interesting to do. Our ethnographic approach involved three components. One, and let us be clear what ethnography is here as we go ahead. I always like to kick this thing for anthropologists. Ethnography is not a qualitative research method. Ethnography is an approach, is a research methodology that often includes qualitative as well as quantitative methods. So we used an ethnographic approach. Okay. Our ethnographic approach had three parts. First was just an ethnographic presence. We were in the community. We have a long-term involvement with these communities, up to 8 years in some of them, working with different organizations on different topics. Some, not only did the community partner live in these counties, but some of our staff at Wake Forest lives in these counties. So we have local residents. We encouraged our staff members to hang out at the tiendas. Now, in these counties, tiendas are not just places where you buy Mexican food from Mexico, but there are often places where you can sit around and have lunch and socialize. So we told our staff that they could hang out at tiendas and get paid for it. And they at first thought that we were kidding, but no, we were actually serious. So we encouraged them to do that. We encourage community volunteerism and participation. So people from this project help with community events. They're out, they attend the community events, they help organize them. They attend church in the local churches so that they're seen and they're there. We as investigators who would stick out like me, who speaks about no Spanish, I'd stick out like a sore thumb at a tienda and nobody would talk to me. But the community-based organizations, I have some skills that they use. I know how to write proposals. I know how to design surveys and things, and those are skills that the community organizations needed, and myself and my other Wake Forest colleagues could provide that technical assistance to the community-based organizations and to the health departments in these counties. And finally, we decided that we needed to collect data in those counties, and we did it for some other things, but we also collected data on issues that local people thought were important. So we would get an intramural grant of $15,000 and go do research on mental health because they thought mental health was an issue and there were no data, so we helped them collect that data because that's something we could do and share with them while they were sharing their local expertise with us. The next thing we did in our ethnographic approach was do in-depth interviews. We did both key informant and formal in-depth interviews. Now the difference is the key informants, you go to the tienda and you talk to the guy who runs the store, or you go to the priest or the minister at the church, or you go to a county health department director or health educator, and you sit and talk to them informally, no tape recorder here. And then you come back and you write notes about what you learned. You find out from them what's going on without in an informal way, though they know you're doing research. We also did in-depth interviews, yes, with service providers and poultry workers, in which we tape recorded them, transcribed them, did formal qualitative data analysis. And that tells you a little bit about the content of these things. We also did windshield surveys. What we found is that when you're looking at Latino neighborhoods in these areas, because we wanted to see where Latinos live so we could interview them, is that if you see houses with lots of bicycles, or certain types of TV satellite dishes, that's where Latinos live because they use the bicycles for transportation because often they don't have driver's license and bicycles are a heck of a lot cheaper than gasoline and cars. And this type of satellite dish is the one that gets the most Spanish-speaking, Spanish-language stations. And so what we did is we mapped neighborhoods based on this. Okay. So from doing this, what we found out is that poultry workers live in segregated neighborhoods as well as in isolated households. So you have a Latino here and a Latino there, but there are other areas that are almost exclusively Latino. We became familiar with these. We knew where the neighborhoods were. We had a list of isolated households because we've been in the community. And we became trusted by the community leaders so that they could vouch for us, that if you talked to us, we were not going to turn you into either the poultry company or to ICE. This will give you an idea of what one of the maps... I had the lid on. And one of the maps looked like... So this is a neighborhood, mostly Latino, and you can see where the Latino with poultry workers' houses are. What that allowed us to do then when we designed our sample is once we figured out what the proportion of the population was in these neighborhoods versus isolated, we decided that our sample would be two-thirds from these neighborhoods. We could list the neighborhoods. We knew how many poultry workers lived in those neighborhoods, and we could sample proportionate to the percent of the total population that we knew about in those things. So we could do a proportionate sample, and we could then, when we went to the isolated households, we could randomly select those, put them in a random order so that we weren't just going to the ones that were closest to us, again, trying to get rid of bias. One-third of our sample was from isolated households, and the others, again, were from the neighborhoods. So, what did this result in? This resulted in a sample of 200, which is what we wanted. We wanted 100 men and 100 women. Oh, well, 101 and 99 was pretty close. We wanted 100 house of our respondents from the largest county, the county with the largest proportion of poultry workers. We got that. And we wanted 50 others from two other groups of counties. As I say, we were doing six counties, but we divided them into groups, the largest, the northern, and then the southern. So, as a result of this, what we can conclude is that the survey sample identified and recruited provided scientifically reliable and valid information. It wasn't a purely random sample, but I would argue that almost no sample was particularly random, at least in my experience. But it allowed us to document work-related exposures and occupational problems, health problems that these folks experienced, and a paper earlier today talked about that. It allowed us to design an educational program for healthcare providers, which we're not going to talk about at this meeting, but is going to be up on the web soon, I hope, and argue for change for occupational health regulations, which we've been able to do by working with our advocacy partners. These methods within a CBPR project facilitated sample development in this hard-to-reach population. And then finally, CBPR collaborations take considerable time to develop and maintain, but they support the conduct of valid and reliable science. Thank you.